Oh, hi everyone, it's Warren Hayes, and we're going to be talking about AEW Dynamite. Specifically, the AEW Dynamite that transpired on November 30th, 2022. Today is December 1st, it's the Thursday. That's what we do here. We review Dynamite on the next day. We're going to jump right into it, but you know, full disclosure just before we go on, I'm feeling a little under the weather today, not going to lie. Not feeling my tip-top best. So if this review is a little shorter than usual, so be it, and I apologize. However, you know, I say this, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I go off on a thing for 15 minutes that I didn't plan on, and then, you know, I end up going 2 hours, you know, or whatever. So, you know, this forewarning might be completely pointless, but, you know, maybe my energy levels aren't exactly there either. You know, maybe not on the same level as usual. And I apologize. I apologize in advance if you're not getting the full Warren Hayes experience. But you know that if you are subscribed to the Mr. Warren Hayes Show channel on YouTube, you can get the full Warren Hayes experience any other time. So if you're not subscribed already, go ahead and do it and give the video a like as well. And a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Or a 5-star rating on Spotify would also be a tremendous help to help grow the podcast. And I appreciate any little significant tidbit of help you can give in the meantime. So thank you all very much. But let's get right into it. I don't think there's like there's a big overarching tale that has to, like some meta to the show, I guess, that we need to get through. I think we can jump right in to last night's show from Indianapolis, Indiana, the Farmers Coliseum. Got some attendance numbers here, courtesy of WrestleTix. 3,608 tickets were distributed last night. The setup was for 4,616. So there's just shy over 1,000 tickets that were still available at WrestleTix's last count. So definitely not a sold out arena. Interesting to note that the last time Dynamite was at the Farmers Coliseum, which was pretty much 1 year ago on November 10th, 4,843 tickets were distributed. So that is a significant difference in regards to this year. This is something I'm going to try to chronicle a little more as we keep moving forward here with the reviews. Currently a concern with AEW's live gates. You know, the pay-per-views are doing great. Like, you know, Full Gear was a virtual sellout. I think they had like 400 tickets left overall, so that, you know, that's a virtual sellout at that point. 1,000 tickets in a market that you visited over a year ago. Let me say that again. 1,000 tickets still available in an arena, a market whose last time you visited was a full year ago and had more tickets out there, like, you know, had 1,200 more people in the arena during the last visit. That's not a good sign. Of course, we can absolutely point this to CM Punk no longer being around. You know, whatever your opinion is on the whole CM Punk situation with the Elite, it is impossible to, or at least it's possible, but it's bad faith to consider that CM Punk was not a draw for the company. He was the top billed star. He was absolutely a draw. And, you know, so of course him not being around, I think it's been significant in showing the amount of interest that is in the show. You know, losing your biggest star like that, maybe, you know, some people aren't exactly excited to see. And, you know, as the Elite, you know, the whole confusion as well around whether the Elite were going to come back and so on and so forth, what was happening. You know, that probably hampered ticket sales as well. And, you know, maybe despite the fact that the Elite, it's been announced now, it's been 2 weeks since their return, maybe it just wasn't enough to get people reinterested in checking out sales availability and go out and see it. It was all a very, very strange setup. Not a strange setup. It's a very unfortunate situation, but clearly there is concern around some of the gates, the live gates that AEW is doing when the show is not a pay-per-view. And this show was not a pay-per-view. It was a Dynamite. Let's start talking about it. The show starts off with a promo by John Moxley. I can't be the only one that kind of doesn't like the way Justin Roberts introduces John Moxley. Like he wants to give it like this low, gravelly John. You know, John. John. And it's always felt a little cringe to me. And honestly, I still haven't gotten used to it. No matter how many times I've heard him say it, do it, I'm still like, why make it sound like like his name is Jan when his name is John? Because it seems to me like John Moxley would be fine, but he really does a Jan. I don't know. Anyway, the show starts off with a promo. You guys, gals, non-binary pals know what my stance is on this. When you start a show with a promo, the promo better be critical. It better be essential. It better have profound implications. There should be a reason for it to happen at that moment, at the opening salvo of a show instead of a wrestling match. It better be something that absolutely makes sense for it to happen. And out the gate, it did not make sense to me. It makes sense as we move along. And even there, you could argue. You could absolutely make an argument to say that this didn't have to open the show, despite the implication that it had on a further angle later on in the day, the evening, the show. Anyway, he hits the ring. He starts talking about how he wrestled his first few shows in Indianapolis, and there's no one that can outwork, out hustle, out wrestle, out fight, out bleed, or out sweat him. Today, nothing's really changed, and he's still at the top of the food chain. He does and says what he wants, and this ring belongs to him. He also adds that there's not a man in that locker room that has the balls to come out here, look him in the eyes, and tell him any different. And surprise, surprise, Hangman Adam Page's music hits to a very good reaction from the crowd. Page goes right up to Moxley, nose to nose, almost as if, you know, there's certain circumstances where I'm like, are they going to kiss? It sure came across like that. Just a big old angry smooch. Mox asks him, are you sure you want to do this after what happened last time? Which gets a ooh from the audience. But then Moxley doubles down and says, oh, maybe you don't remember. And he can't finish his sentence because as he says that, Paige is all over him and they brawl. Good pull apart brawl. Just like I like them. You have the security schlubs who come in to try to keep them apart, and one of the guys breaks away and dumps on the other guy. Mox almost kills himself on the ramp, almost falling off. That would have been I don't think this is this would not be the time for John Moxley to get himself injured, because clearly they're still leaning very hard into him and his presence to make this show work. You know, everyone was like, oh, time for him to take his vacation. Finally, he can take his vacation. Dude is back. And I mean, and Renee's working too. You know, these are two hustlers. They know what it's about. They know what the business is about. There'll be time for vacations. I'm sure they spend tons of quality time with their kid. Because, you know, AEW doesn't run house shows. So, you know, it's basically out once a week. You hit the road once a week and you're good. Then you go home. It's a much lighter schedule. So I'm sure they appreciate that, and I'm sure neither of them really mind about this vacation stuff, which was, you know, all conjecture anyway. But I like this angle. I like these kinds of angles, and I like these types of brawls, and I thought this one was done well. And they split them apart. I noticed that Jon Moxley walked out the heel tunnel. Might just be that, you know, security told him to go that way and Paige the other way, but it wasn't Paige who went out the heel tunnel. And this brawl would continue on later on as well during a commercial backstage where Paige is just walking and all of, out of nowhere, Jon Moxley just runs him down and they start brawling some more. I liked it. And then from that point on, it's at that moment that commentary says, and Tony Schiavone says, yeah, I've just been announced Jon Moxley's being expelled from the building. Okay. And it doesn't make sense at that point why. You're just like, oh, okay, he's being tossed. But at that point, you don't know why. You don't know exactly why that little detail is significant, but it ends up being rather significant. So again, you know, did it have to open the show? Well, I don't know, man. I didn't know if it had to open the show, but, you know, it had to happen early on in the show because the fact that Jon Moxley got tossed from the building is a significant detail to make sure a story later in the show makes sense. But they definitely could have done this as a second from the top kind of thing. Anyway, that led us to Bryan Danielson defeating Dax Harwood. Jeez, what's wrong with me today? Harwood in a very good match. Another good one. And we get this is awesome chance to start things straight off the bat. Because you know what? Here's the thing. This is what a lot of Dax Harwood, FTR, they're over. They're over with the company. They're over with fans. And, you know, as much as wrestling Twitter would like to tell themselves that they have this this, you know, understanding of Dax Harwood and they like to say, oh well, he's so and so, and you know, I can't get behind him because he's always complaining on Twitter about this and this and that. And it's like, that music hits, that FTR tune hits, people are up out of their seats. You get Daniel Bryan face to face with Dax Harwood in the ring, and people are already chanting, this is awesome chants. So regardless of what anyone thinks, I can't stand Dax Harwood. He's such a Bret Hart geek. And, you know, Dax, we know where Dax falls on the CM Punk Elite stuff. So, you know, that probably doesn't add. It probably doesn't help him. He's still over. FTR is still over. And I don't know what to tell you. And anyone who's going to try and tell you the opposite is like, well, don't get that much reactions. Nope. There is empirical, observable evidence to the opposite. So this is a discourse that has to, that you can either buy into or not. But if you're buying into it, it's feelings. It's people's feelings that got hurt for whatever reason, that are annoyed for whatever reason. And they're trying to make an agenda out of it. FTR are over. I don't know what to tell you. Danielson strikes and does the corner flip. Dax Harwood gets a O'Connor roll and a crossbody on Danielson as well. Danielson dives on Harwood and they slug it out on the floor. They get back in the ring. Harwood lands three German suplexes on Danielson. Last one, of course, releases it. Also lands a pile driver, which he had to work for. Danielson didn't give that one up easily, and I like that. That's the thing, is like when you end up in an environment where you're supposed to have professional wrestlers, and especially top-tier professional wrestlers like Bryan Danielson, who is quite possibly the greatest North American wrestler to ever do it. There's some things where you're like, it doesn't make sense if he just lifts him up into a pile driver. So, you know, he sets Danielson up for the pile driver, but Danielson's like, no, I see this coming. So he tried to fight out of it, tried to reverse it, but Harwood didn't give up and he landed the pile driver on him. Flying knee off the apron by Danielson, hammer and anvil, elbows on the turnbuckles. We get a super back body drop by Bryan Danielson, which is reversed midair by Dax into a crossbody, lands on top for a cover, but Danielson rolls through into a reversal to cover Harwood himself, and Harwood kicks out of that. They headbutt each other on the mat. Short arm lariats by Harwood, but Danielson no-sells them. Danielson fights back. They slug it out some more. Exhaustion is setting in. People are loving it. They're up out of their seats. Slingshot Liger Bomb by Harwood. Covers. Kick out by Danielson. But Harwood immediately locks in a sharpshooter. There's some pinfall attempts. Danielson reverses into the LaBell lock. Harwood taps. Not much of a surprise for the result here. But the boys hug after the match. This was very good. Again, chalk this up to my typical broken record discourse of we are spoiled on a weekly basis to get such excellent pro wrestling on a Wednesday night. We're just spoiled. So that was good. I enjoyed it a great deal. And again, this would turn out to be an important factor towards a storyline a little later on in the evening. Ricky Starks is interviewed backstage. He's entering himself into the Battle Royal next week to determine the number one contender or the challenger for it's challenger, right? You don't contend for a ring, I don't think. But he's entering himself into the Battle Royal next week for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Whoever wins it is going to fight Maxwell Jacob Friedman for the ring. And there's a couple of people. I noticed Dalton Castle was going to be in that Battle Royal, and that makes my heart sing. It makes me happy that Castle is getting more time up on the flagship show. I think he's the type of personality that AEW needs right now. I think, you know, we've got a lot of fighters, we got a lot of goofy guys, but, you know, like someone that is just flamboyant and exuberant, I think this is where he belongs. I think he's necessary to mix it up and have a good little breath of fresh air. You're not going to tell me that the entrance he got in his Ring of Honor world title match against Chris Jericho a couple of weeks on a goddamn Dynamite of all places. He got a fantastic entrance. You know, it wasn't a pay-per-view, but he got a pay-per-view-like entrance. You're not telling me that that guy's not compelling and that Tony doesn't know what he's got? So, sure, I feel like you always have to caveat this. It's not the Dalton Castle of, you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. His back is his worst enemy now, sure. But he can still go, and he can be entertaining as hell. Anyway, back to Ricky Starks. He's got himself into the Battle Royal because, as he said, he's coming for everything MJF has. His title, his ring, his spot. Good little babyface promo there. Renee Paquette is interviewing the Blackpool Combat Club and the Jericho Appreciation Society at the Soundstage in Nashville. Again, look at all these little tidbits that are being dropped, and we're not connecting anything at this point. We're not going, huh? But they did commentary, did mention, make a point of saying, at their Soundstage in Nashville. Ergo, Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta are not in Indianapolis tonight. Anyway, this segment in and about itself, there's a lot of taunting, purple hat talk. You know, God bless Jake Hager for being more over at any circumstance, at any point in his career right now because of a goofy angle. Good for him if he's able to make it work. But you can absolutely see the shelf life on this. It's going to wear out very soon. Matt Menard tells Claudio that he can be anything if he joins the Jericho Appreciation Society. When he's forced to join the Jericho Appreciation Society, I should say. He can even start yodeling, which Claudio sort of got pissed off at. He's pissed also because he wants to win the Ring of Honor title back. Daniel Garcia offers up a tag team match for next week's Dynamite. Him and Hager versus Yuta and Claudio. And Wheeler accepts it as long as Dan Garcia puts the Pure title up on the line at Final Battle against him. So there you go. Final Battle, as a quick note right now, it's from the time we're recording this, it's in 9 days. And this is probably the Ring of Honor pay-per-view under the Tony Khan era that has been the least properly hyped, outside of Chris Jericho and Claudio Castagnoli, which is a match we've seen before, of course, but you know, it's not necessarily the problem. We're not just landing with a super fresh match here. We've got basically really not much covered, not much confirmed, which is weird because the Chris Jericho angle is very well done and very hot, and I feel like there should be more fire to this right now. We're throwing in Yuta versus Yuta versus Garcia, which is again a match that happened fairly recently, just a couple of months ago, for the Pure title as well, when Dan Garcia finally won it. We're hinting at things, you know, we're hinting at Mercedes Martinez versus Athena. But that's pretty much it. Like, it's a very bare card right now. And it's not even being built around a single match like, let's say Super Card of Honor, which was built around the Briscoes and FTR. And that was really the focal point, and everything sort of fell into place afterwards. Now we're 9 days out, and not much is known about the card. And, you know, again, according to WrestleTix, you know, current capacity is 3,657 for the College Park Center in Arlington, Texas. Distributed 1,800 tickets. So basically, there's still half of the venue that is available. And the show's in 9 days. So Wednesday will have to be a Final Battle go home show in some form or another. But this isn't great. Like, it is legitimately not a fantastic preview setup for Final Battle. And I can understand anyone who's not excited about it. Anyone's sort of like, this is just sort of happening. There's been virtually little build, which again is strange because the Chris Jericho Ring of Honor title angle has been fantastic. This should be, there should have been more to this on the card tonight. Last night. But back to the card, we have a AEW TNT title match where Samoa Joe defeated the newly signed, officially signed, AR Fox. There was kind of a backstage vignette, was it last week, where we sort of dropped that AR Fox was getting a contract, but he got the graphic yesterday. Nothing but good news for a longtime veteran like him to finally get picked up by a major company on TV, whatever his role will be, right? This is a culmination of years of work for him, of dedication, of a guy who has trained so many people that are out there and having great success, and who is very well liked, considered a genuinely good person. So again, let's celebrate the good thing when the good people in wrestling get good things happen, have good things happen to them. Let's take a pause here and celebrate that. Anyway, in this match, Samoa Joe gets punched to the floor. Fox goes for a Topikan Hilo. Of course, Joe does the nope, step away thing, but AR Fox lands on his feet while Joe has his back turned to him, which is something new. Have we finally figured out the counter to the Joe nope? So he kicks Joe, and we get back into the ring. Joe lands a leg sweep and a senton, a sidewalk slam. Fox hits a jumping DDT, a short cutter on the mat, which was pretty cool, and a 450 splash. Goes for a moonsault. Joe does the nope. This time it's successful. AR Fox didn't have an answer for it. Joe hits the muscle buster for the win. After the match, Joe calls himself the one true king of television, because he's the Ring of Honor TV champion and the TNT champion. But Wardlow pops up on the Tonytron to say, to tell Joe that he ain't done with him yet. So that might be a match also for Final Battle. But again, what's going on? We get a cinematic video package for Will Hobbs. If we're going to get down and gritty with Hobbs, I liked how this was shot. I'm all for it. I'm interested to see. Clearly, we see big things for Will Hobbs, so I'm excited to see how this goes. Then we go back to Taz breaking down Hooks's win. Hooks win. Why did I say Hooks's? He's not plural. There's no, it's just Hook. Hooks win on Lee Moriarty. So that was always a segment I liked from Taz. I'm glad they're bringing it back. I hope they do it more. And then probably the biggest talking point of the show occurred just shy of the 9 o'clock hour. William Regal walks down to the ring and introduces MJF, who comes out. They embrace in the ring. And MJF gets on the mic. He talks down the crowd and reads an email that Regal sent him. Not the original one, but an email that Regal sent him, where Regal offered to help him reach his full potential and to help him beat Mox at Full Gear. They say they wanted to leave Mox with an emotional scar, so he'll never forget the day he was outsmarted by MJF. As far as the firm goes, because I like this little part here where we have to sort of tie up this loose end, he says, as far as the firm goes, I kind of respect them. They saw weakness and attacked like sharks, and he would have done the same thing. He calls the AEW world title tacky. He says it lacks class. And worst of all, it reminds him of all the men who have held it previously. So they decide to instead reveal a variant of the AEW title, something just for MJF, a custom title, which they reveal. And it is the what he likes to call the Big Burberry Belt, the Triple B, which is essentially the exact same design as the current AEW championship belt, but the leather is printed with Burberry plaid, excuse me. And I thought that was hilarious. And I'm like, look, if you're going to do it, it makes absolute sense for MJF to be like, no, you know what? This shit thing, I'm going to be the top guy here. Top guy needs his own title. I love it. And you know what? The brown, even though like the plaid, and I'm no belt nerd here, you know, there's people are much more, you know, who could probably point stuff out to me a lot more and the, you know, and probably have some true critique in regard to the belt. But I like it first and foremost because it kept the AEW belt design, which I think is beautiful. But, you know, maybe you don't see the Burberry plaid all that well on the leather, but the gold on the brown looks pretty damn good from afar. I'm like, oh, that's a good little combo there. So we have an MJF variant of the belt, which I approve of. He says nobody will be able to be world champion as long as he is champion. Not people like Eddie Kingston or Ricky Starks or Bryan Danielson, the fakest of wrestlers, he says. And he says compared to him, Danielson couldn't wrestle his way out of a paper bag. He refers to the bidding war of 2024 again, and he hopes that the right con foots the bill. And we're talking about jolly old Saint Nick and his other boy, the Game Trips. Now, I'll talk about it in a second. And he says he might even have his sights on Hollywood. Like, he is pushing all the right buttons for wrestling fans, AEW fans, to get pissed off at him. And then MJF explains heel champion booking 101. He literally walks you through how to book a world champion who is a heel. He says he will defend the title only on occasion, rarely. He'll wrestle rarely because he's a special attraction. In order to see him defend the title, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have to reach into your pockets and buy the pay-per-view. He's going to have a world title that'll make Hulk Hogan's look short and will make Bruno Sammartino roll in his shitty little grave. I don't know why. The shitty was a little, had a little extra oomph to it, right? He's wrapping up the promo and he's saying nice things about Regal, but MJF blindsides Regal with the brass knuckles, just at the back of the head. Max crouches over him, calls back a line from the email that Regal originally sent him years ago, and says he only hires top tier talents now. So he leaves, and then medical staff swarm over Regal to have a stretcher job done, and a great stretcher job at that. Like, Regal just passed out. Like, Regal was just like not slowly moving to the side or whatever. No, he was like dead, DOA. Not for real, not dead. Not even kayfabe dead. You know what I mean? Like, knocked out. And commentary in the meantime is putting over how heinous this action is because of Regal's medical history, which we had already learned about last week. It's, there's, oh, but There's no stories in AEW. There's no continuity. And there we go. We set the seeds last week. We didn't realize it. Danielson is out to check on him. See, Danielson couldn't make it on time and came out because, look, he's in his shorts. He still has, you know, half his gear on. He's, you know, clearly he showered. He just like ran out. He was probably hanging out backstage, you know, poo-pooing on the catering or whatever. And he ran out when he saw this happen. Then they stretcher him out, and even we come back from commercial. We see Regal being put into the ambulance, and Danielson is right there as well. What a fantastic segment. Was it a perfect segment? No. I think it was very good. I'm going to give you a bunch of thoughts here. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. There's a lot of people who complain about the length. This is your top guy. This is the top guy of the company right now. He's got your main strap. He's the world champion. He didn't come out last week. He's coming out this week to address the pores. Right? He comes out to address the pores. So you're going to give him time. And you'll be comfortable giving him time because it's MJF. MJF is perfect to work a live promo. Not a problem. He carried this entire segment on his back. And it worked out wonderfully. My main critique would be this. I think that MJF felt the crowd energy was a little low. I felt like, so I think he reverted to maybe trying to get some cheap heat from them a little too often, calling them out, calling them hillbillies, calling them poors, he did it a few times, which I felt dragged and took away from what he was going for. But the critical thing that he had to do here was make sure everyone understood that he is a heel. And that if you were anywhere, if any of your discussion points, your talking points in regards to MJF over the past few months leading into Full Gear was like, oh, is he going to be a babyface, so on and so forth. You weren't paying attention, and MJF wants you to make damn sure that you know that the plan was never for him to be a babyface. He is a heel. He's a bastard and he's a son of a bitch. He manipulated you into thinking that he was having a crisis of conscience, that he was maybe he was going to be a good guy. He was going to do the right thing, but he didn't. And not only that, he clocked out. He knocked out. That's what I tried to say. He knocked out the guy who helped them do it. Complete, utter bullshit heel. In this promo, he's talking about the bidding war of 2024 again. He keeps bringing it up and he keeps talking. He keeps saying positive things about WWE, how he's pals with Triple H, how he's pals with Nick Khan, the enemy. These are the people that AEW fans do not like. And then on top of that, so he's saying, you know what? Tony's going to have to break out the checkbook because I'm ready to go to the big leagues, is basically what he's saying. And he says in his promo, I sure to hope jolly old Saint Nick is the guy who can offer me the most money because I don't want to stick around here anymore. This is custom made to get a diehard AEW fan angry. Piss him off. And then on top of that, he's talking about going to Hollywood, which is the thing that all wrestling fans revile. All wrestling fans turn on wrestlers who end up going to Hollywood. It happened with John Cena. It happened with The Rock. Eventually, Eventually, they all come back and smooth everything over. But the Call of Hollywood is another heel move. And which is not out of the, which we should not discount regardless in regards to MJF's potential career. He's going to be in the, we all know by now he's going to be in the Von Erichs film. Rumors say that he's playing one of the Von Erichs. So, you know, this is an exciting time right now to have MJF as a top heel, like a tippy top heel, be the world champion. As much as Kenny's run was fun, MJF's is going to be an entirely different type of heel. He said it himself. He says, look, I'm not going to wrestle every Tom, Dick, and Harry. I'm not going to wrestle on every Dynamite. You're going to have to pay to see me. This is an entirely different dynamic from any world champion we've had so far in this company. Again, it should be clear why AEW fans are a little more attracted to the work rate of wrestlers than anything else. They want to see them wrestle and perform and have great matches. And MJF's like, no, you're not gonna get to see me wrestle for free all that much. When I do wrestle, you're gonna have to chuck up the dough, son. It's just basic but effective stuff. And within his promo, he's seeding the future. And this is what a great promo does. Sets things in motion for the future. Mention Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks is his upcoming opponent at Winter and is coming in a couple of weeks. So, of course, you got to drop his name. Mentions Eddie Kingston out of the blue. Eddie Kingston is one of the most over baby faces in the company. Everybody loves Eddie Kingston. So he singles him out and is like, you know what? Your boy, Eddie Kingston, he can hit the bricks. Kingston tweeted about it. So might be something brewing there. And he calls out Danielson. Of course, saying, you know, the most preposterous stuff, but still calls him out. And effectively set the tone for a feud with Danielson, because Danielson stuck by Regal this entire time that he got knocked out, went into the ambulance with him back to the hospital. So we have everything set for MJF Danielson moving forward here. I think that, like I said, the only problem that I had with the promo was that I think by reaching out to the audience a little too much, I think it dragged it down a little bit. But other than that, I thought it was a good address. He set the stage. He established what kind of champion he's going to be. All great stuff. Now, of course, this event with MJF knocking the hell out of William Regal did nothing to quell the speculation about William Regal going back to WWE. Which was something that we thought about last week when Regal was written off television. You know, there were a lot of people who started speculating about that. And then Dave Meltzer started reporting on it, if we're working down the timeline here. Meltzer started reporting on it, saying that William Regal's deal was only for a year. Then he corrected himself. And he said, no, it's for 3 years. A correction on my previous report. So the speculation was, okay, well, he's there for 3 years, and Tony Khan has never let anyone out of their contract early. It's always, you know, time for a precedent, but he's never done it before. There's not, the history's not there. So William Regal is likely going to be around for a while. And on Wrestling Observer Radio just a couple of days ago, Dave is talking about how, no, it's three years, but, you know, there's a lot of talk going on, a lot of people that are chit-chattering, and I've been told things off the record that I can't talk about. So is he leaving? Is he staying? Well, you know, look, his contract is for 3 years, you know, and Dave clearly knows, was at that point was like, no, he was leaving the impression that he knew what was going on, but he couldn't talk about it. But he says, you know, oh, no, there's been a lot of talk about him going back and so on and so forth. And that sort of created a little more ambiguity, right? And I mean, the idea, again, it is entirely possible for Tony Khan to just get up and say, you know what, sure, I'll release you from your contract on these terms, whatnot. These are people, they're businessmen, they can sit down, they can negotiate, you know, that's fine. But there hasn't been the precedent, so there's nothing to lean on to say, yeah, Tony's going to do it, because he's never done it before. If he does it, he's setting the precedent. It will be the first time. But then today, not earlier than today, this morning on Wrestling Observer Radio, I think Dave slipped. I think Dave let us know what was happening despite himself. I guess this is what happens when you collect so much information and you're like, well, this stuff is off the record. I can't talk about it. You get heated for a moment and then something slips. This is what Dave said about the angle when MJF laid out Regal here. Quote, when it was all over, I was just like, what was the purpose of this? Put so much heat on a guy who is leaving. Moxley gets no revenge at all. MJF is turning heel on a guy who is a heel, so the fans are mixed up, and great, we've got a new belt. I think Dave was very confused this morning as well, because during this Wrestling Observer Radio, he was also like, I would have liked to have a video package to remind me of the feud between Jon Moxley and Adam Page. I'm like, excuse me. Anyway, back to the important part. When it was all over, I was just like, what was the purpose of this? Put so much heat on a guy who's leaving. Up until this point, Dave has never said that William Regal was out the door. He was saying his contract is for 3 weeks. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of things in play. And now he straight up says, putting heat on a guy who is leaving. So there is much, much more. Look, you know where they often say where there's smoke, there's fire? You know, I think this was something that was bound to happen. And look, this is the thing here, right? Is, you know, I talked about it on the Warren Hayes Show podcast on Tuesday. But it bears being reminded here. Isn't it fantastic that we are in an era of pro wrestling where talent, not just wrestlers here, look, on-screen talent have options, can be leveraged, can decide to work wherever they want, kind of thing, where they have options to make a good paycheck. Regal gets fired by Vince for no apparent reason. AEW's like, why don't you come do a stint for us? That'd be great. He's like, yeah, let's go. Triple H is back in charge. I mean, this is something that many people were expecting. And I don't think anyone should be shocked or surprised. Regal and Paul are tight. Regal's kid is wrestling in NXT. So, you know, and I think he enjoys, I think he probably enjoys the environment there as well. You know, there's a, whatever William Regal wants to do to make himself feel happy, content, I think that's a, I think that's fantastic. What kind of role will he have backstage? Hopefully one where he can interact with talent. Because I think that's where his value is. You know, and he'll probably have some stories of what happened in the locker room backstage to share with Paul. Like, there's all that little bit of information. But, you know, it's a significant departure because William Regal is a significant on-air talent and a backstage hand as well. I think it's, you know, maybe William Regal wanted to have a bigger role in AEW. Right? But maybe Tony just had other plans, you know, Tony giving more substantial coaching roles to Chris Jericho and John Moxley, making that official. Maybe that's something where he's like, well, look, I've already have all these people, bringing in Jeff Jarrett to look over live shows. You know, maybe Tony's team is just, you know, filled to the brim right now. And Regal's like, look, I don't know how I can be useful to you, really. And that's fine. And if he feels he can go back and be useful with Paul, whom he gets along with, good for him. And I think this is the main takeaway that anyone with half a fucking brain should take away as well. Not a thing about, oh, he's going back to WWE, victory, or AEW, he's leaving AEW, traitor, you know. None of that bullshit. Everyone should be happy for a guy like William Regal with the career he's had and the life that he has had as well. And he should be able to be in a position to do this kind of stuff. And the only reason why he's able to do it is because there is competition on a high level in pro wrestling. And that is fantastic. So whatever he decides, it will be the best decision. Personally, that's how I feel. As a fan, it sucks because, you know, this is a guy that I won't see on my television anymore. So that kind of bums me out. Just watch WWE, Warren. Come on now. Funny. Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway come out just before Ricky Starks' match. And they run out. And Matt Hardy runs out between them to do the delete stuff. And he gets chided for it. And he gets sent backstage by Page and Hathaway. And I can already tell this angle is going to annoy me. Which leads us to the match with Ricky Starks, who squashes Ari Daivari with the Rochambeau. Why wouldn't you do that? This is what you got to do. I'm all for squash matches, especially for contenders. Britt Baker is backstage. She's Jamie Hayter and Rebel. She brings up the sit-down interview with Saraya and Renee that's going to happen on Rampage. And Jamie Hayter's like, well, I should get a sit-down on my own, Tony Schiavone. Why don't we do that next week? And Tony's like, all right, sure. And Willow Nightingale defeats Anna Jax in a fun women's match here. Big shoulder tackles by Nightingale. And some short arm lariats, low crossbody as well. Anna Jay fights back with a high kick and a flipping neck breaker. Anna Jay strikes and works over Nightingale. Nightingale strikes back with a spine buster, a heel kick by Anna Jay, hits the gory bomb, but Nightingale kicks out. Nightingale drops Anna Jay out of the Queen Slayer, Doctor Bomb, Willow wins. Big win, big flagship show win in a singles match for Willow Nightingale, a girl that clearly Tony sees as something special because he's throwing her out there, looking at the crowd reaction. How was the crowd reacting? The crowd was chanting her name for the majority of the match. She's over, and she's over because of her work. Because on top of that, here's the thing, and I've mentioned this before about Willow, but we got to hammer this home. Willow works like no other woman on that roster. She has the strength, the speed, and this insanely infectious babyface energy about her. She is a unique member of the roster that will get over faster than probably any of us expect. Fantastic stuff. And a good match. We got to point out Anna Jay as well, who I thought looked solid as hell here. Got all her shit in, looked great. This women's mid-card was looking pretty good. QT Marshall and Orange Cassidy are backstage with Tony Schiavone, and they set an All-Atlantic title match for Friday. Woo! It's a lumberjack match. Boo! Fucking lumberjack matches. God, man. Jade Cargill does her big-ass celebration with the baddies, accompanied by the smallest celebratory cake I have ever seen. Like, look, I understand that Jade and these women, these wrestlers, a lot of them, they're very careful about their intake, what they eat, maybe having like a huge three-decker cake maybe wasn't exactly the way to go. Maybe they're like, nah, I'm not even gonna eat. It's like, just go get an ice cream cake at Dairy Queen, and it doesn't matter because I'm not gonna have any kind of thing. It could be. And I can appreciate that. But for the spectacle of it, for the show, if you're telling me this is a celebration, and what you end up doing is giving me the saddest cake of all time during the celebration, I'm like, someone dropped the ball. Like, I really feel like someone ran to Dairy Queen at the last minute. Maybe they had a lovely cake and it toppled over backstage, and then they're like, they were in full panic mode. You don't know. But if this was the plan from the start, I'm like, Christ, come on, people. It doesn't have to be a huge cake where we expect people to jump out of it either. She talks down the baddies for hanging out with Kira Hogan over the weekend. So she's like, look, I make your careers. And both of the baddies were sort of like giving her some side eye and mouthing off a little bit. Like, yeah, whatever. It's like, okay. And then they go over this Bow Wow thing. Bow Wow comes up on the screen and he says he has plans for her since he's not on tour anymore. Okay, so we'll see how that goes. But look, Jade, look. They know what they're doing with this woman. And she knows what she's doing. You cannot tell me that she did not completely own the room. If you're... Look, you are a red-blooded American, male or female. And you're flipping through stations. And you have her in her... removing her in her, her $100 bill getup, if you want to call it that, and her green fur coat, and she's taking it off just to reveal her with her fucking silvery hair. She looking like a Roman goddess, right? Greek goddess. I hate the Roman gods. They all stink. Let's go with the Greeks. If you're flipping through the stations and you see that accidentally, you stop and you're like, holy shit. You know exactly what you're doing. This is why we keep saying Jade is $1 million. And on top of that, when is the last time Jade cut a live in-ring promo in front of the crowd? She's done tons of pre-tapes, she's done backstage stuff, that's fine. But there is a significant difference between doing it backstage and in front of the crowd. A little rough at times, but a very good promo by Jade, who gets her personality across. She gets her points across. She plays with the crowd on top of that. She's getting more and more comfortable with all of this wrestling shit. Why wouldn't she? Some of the best fucking wrestlers in the world backstage. You know, she came in, clearly she was a Cody product, right? Clearly. And I was, you know, I never really brought this up because, you know, at some point you sort of like, you know, sometimes the conspiracy theories, you have to hold them back, you know. You don't always have to go full in on them. But I was wondering, you know, once Cody was gone, I was like, what are they going to do with Jade? Are they going to keep her up, you know, keep her on a pedestal and continue pushing her? And clearly, yes. And sending her out there to cut a live promo in ring, Tony wanted to try something. Tony was like, okay, if you're ready, let's give it a shot. We're going to go. He could not have been disappointed with what happened. Again, promo at sometimes was a little rough, but it's details. It's, you know, it's taking the microphone away from your mouth just as you're finishing your word. Like, technique as opposed to content, as opposed to delivery, as opposed to being able to convey what you're trying to say. She was great. Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed do a drill sergeant segment and they're setting up a tag team match. So anyway, something happened. And we get to the main event of the evening. The next edition of the Best of Seven series. The third match where the Elite defeated Death Triangle to bring the series to 2-1. And it starts before the bell. This one does, where the Elite attack the Death Triangle up on the ramp, and they work them over. Kenny hits a Kitaro Crusher on Pac on the stage. Actually, a V trigger is countered by a kick with a kick by Pac. Death Triangle hit cutters. They fight all over the floor. They're all over the place. Pac moonsaults off the stage. And isn't this happening during Picture in Picture? I'm like, this is great. And I know people are like, why are they doing this during Picture in Picture? There should be more significant stuff happening during Picture in Picture so that people actually watch it. I'd love at some point for a match to finish. I think they've done it once before. I'd love a match to finish during Picture in Picture. People are like, oh shit, I missed the finish. Yeah, you dunce. Penta fights off the Elite. We're back in the ring and we're back towards the ring. Penta's fighting off the Elite. And finally the match starts. Penta has the hammer, the ringside hammer, but Rey Fénix, despite the fact that he used it, He's still not on board with this, and he doesn't want his brother to use it. Death Triangle do a triangle moonsault, floor into the ring, just fantastic stuff. Fear Factor by Penta, double Northern Light suplex by Matt Jackson. Pac and Kenny Omega slug it out on the top turnbuckle, which ends with an avalanche Falcon Arrow by Pac. Who was saying that, oh, Kenny's going to have to take it easy? Kenny's going to have to be careful now with all of his injuries. We won't be seeing exactly the same Kenny. I think I was saying that. And look at him go. Kenny has a beatdown segment, or gets beaten down by Pac for a while. So he's a bit of a babyface in peril here. Nick Jackson lands a Cazador into a cutter on Rey Fénix. The Bucks land more bang for your buck. She hadn't seen in a while. Fénix avoids the BTE trigger, hits a rolling cutter. Fear Factor by Death Triangle by the Lucha Brothers. And then the Lucha Brothers do dives to the floor while Matt Jackson is isolated by Pac, who hits a brain buster. And the Lucha Brothers are holding back Kenny and Nick on the outside. Pac goes up for the Black Arrow. Matt Jackson lifts the knees up. And he lifts the knees up on the face of Pac. And MJF folds him over for three. And we got the concern trolling happening where it's like, oh, how irresponsible to lift the knees on the face. That was the spot. Is because after the you have because that then that's what Pac is clutching, his face. That was the thing. Got the knees up on the already on the mask on the already injured face, which allowed Mac Jackson to get the win because he exploited a weakness. I'm telling you, people need to watch wrestling instead of whatever it is they're watching. And if you're and if you're like, oh no, he looks hurt. Yeah, because he's a pro wrestler. He's supposed to make you believe that. So the series is up 2-1. No sweep, as the cleaner said in the post-match promo. And Death Triangle lost the match because they didn't use the hammer. The hammer was a complete non-factor in this match. And now they lost. So is Phoenix to blame here? This is an interesting little tidbit here. Another little story that keeps getting fed into this into the Death Triangle dynamic. And I don't want to say heel turn or split, because they could still do this for a while, but it's a dynamic that they have now where Pac wants to cheat, Rey Fenix doesn't. Penta's kind of in on it. Penta's like, no, 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 let's fucking go. Like, we gotta maintain our advantage here. Fenix is like, no, we're doing this shit the right way. How is this going to work out? How is this going to play out moving forward with the Death Triangle boys? Interesting. And a great match to boot on top of it all. It's just a fantastic match. Again, bookended. This is the not exactly bookended, because the Dynamite didn't start with a promo. Didn't start with a match, started with a promo. But first match was fantastic. The match out was fantastic. Probably my least favorite of the series so far, of the best of seven. Probably my least favorite, but in and about itself, a very, very strong match, and a good Dynamite overall that set in motion a bunch of things. I MJF's promo, like, we're clearly moving into a new era. That feels like there's new things happening, new things coming, which is, we're still coasting off the feeling of from Full Gear. Full Gear absolutely felt like that. Last week's Dynamite felt like that as well. And now we're adding more people here. We're giving Willow Nightingale a singles match on Dynamite. That's going to be significant. Ricky Starks being established as a contender. We've got that story going. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an overall fine episode of AEW Dynamite. Just as I hope you found this was a fine episode of my AEW Dynamite review. Look at me saying, oh, it might be short. I'm in my usual sphere for the reviews. I didn't disappoint. Why do I even do those? Why did I even bother? I should know myself better by now. And if you know me as well, you were probably at the start going, Warren, are you really going to go short? No. Dad. Thank you everyone for listening or tuning in. Again, one last like on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. If you haven't already, consider some reviews on Apple Podcasts and some ratings on Spotify. I will be back on Tuesday for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper. And again next Thursday for another Dynamite review. In the meantime, thank you all so very, very much for joining me. And I will see you next time.